You see how it is in soccer around the world. Nobody's soft. They don't give a fuck. Yeah. I don't care. Yeah. I don't care that you're the GOAT. I don't care that you play for Napoli and did amazing things for Italian football. You eliminated our national team in the semifinal. This was supposed to be our World Cup. Go f*** yourself. Well, hello, everyone, and welcome to another episode of the 343 Podcast, where we work tirelessly to elevate the level of discourse and practitionership here in American soccer. Today's episode is all about captains. Who should be the captain of the team? Who should not be the captain of the team? Can captains be developed? Or is it purely genetic and nature-based? As you all know, Benny jumps into these episodes and just presents a topic to me. I have zero preparation whatsoever. And this one kind of caught me off guard, a little bit out of left field, because for the vast majority of my experience in the soccer landscape, I didn't really pay that much attention to the captain situation. I mean, it wasn't neglected, but the level of importance seems to be quite down the chain of priorities. But is that correct, or is that not the right way of looking at it? So Benny and I explore that quite a bit. A little bit later in the episode, it smoothly transitions into how soccer is a deeply, or sports generally, is a deeply political enterprise. And not just political, but social, political, economic, and cultural. This is obviously something that has been sprinkled into the 343 ethos since, I mean, the first blog post ever way back in 2009. And it's a very important thing to appreciate. So that said, we're going to jump into the episode straight away. Per usual, this episode and this podcast is sponsored by nobody. We do not accept sponsors. We're not going to be beholden to anybody. And so we sponsor ourselves. How do we do that? Through our products and services, which have catapulted coaching careers to the stratosphere. So coaches, if you're out there, you need to go to 343coaching.com. We have both free and premium programs for you there. If you've been hesitant or delaying or waiting, I strongly encourage you not to do so. You're just delaying your progress at this point. I'm not going to belabor things, but there are testimonials after testimonial after testimonial of how this program is the program you should be in. Parents, we want to do the same exact thing for you. So for you, you go to 343masterclass.com. The idea there is to accelerate you on the learning curve such that you can better guide and mentor your son or daughter through this American soccer landscape, this unique American soccer landscape. So again, 343masterclass.com is where you want to go. And last but certainly not least is for the little ones, the coaches who are coaching in the 7-versus-7 format, you can go to 7v7coaching.com. All right, I hope you enjoy this episode about who should be a team captain. Here we go.
So I wanted to talk today about a topic that doesn't really get brought up much in mainstream media, and even within coaching circles, but it's along the lines of building and developing leaders in youth soccer, in particular, how to find the captain of your team. How can you identify which players are going to be good leaders and role models for the team? How early can you identify these qualities in a kid? And there's a lot of different paths that we can get into. I remember a couple months ago, Gary, when we were talking about Brian and his new role and how he had signed Miguel Ibarra, right? And this is a player that I'm not sure if Brian had coached before, but I remember a specific phrase that you had told me is that, like, now Brian has the locker room secure because he signed this player. And, you know, this player can bring really good qualities in terms of being a leader, keeping the players in check. So number one, what did you mean by that phrase, like keeping the locker room, or now Brian has control of the locker room?
Yeah. First, let's give people a little bit of context because maybe they don't know. So Brian was hired on as the head coach, the first head coach of the new USL franchise out in Antelope Valley, AVFC. And so they have to build this thing from scratch, right? And so obviously everybody has different responsibilities, and roster building is one such responsibility everybody has to kind of pitch into because there is no team, right? And they're starting to play official matches in the league this March. And so Miguel Ibarra is, I don't know if it was the first signing that they announced. Was it the first one? Do you remember, Ben?
Yeah. Yes. He was.
Okay. So Miguel Ibarra, we kind of have a long history with. He was at UC Irvine, where he did his college soccer, D1. They went pretty far, I think. And it was during the era where one of Brian's former players, Jonathan Prieto, went and played his college soccer his freshman year there. And so we got to know the roster there quite well. And obviously we knew the head coach of UC Irvine, George Kuntz, very, very well for many years. And so we would go to a lot of UC Irvine games, and naturally we got to know the players on the roster. And Miguel Ibarra was one such player. So long story short, he ended up playing professionally for MLS for a number of years. He also got called up to the senior men's U.S. men's national team by Jurgen Klinsmann. And so he's had a good professional career. I believe he's 30-something now. I don't know exact age, but yes. So now we get to what you're asking, Benny, that Brian or the club. I don't know who made the decisions there, but I'm sure Brian kind of pitched in his thoughts. They signed him to the team. And so far as leadership is concerned, obviously the Miguel comes with a pedigree, as I just described. And of course, USL League One is considered the third division here in the United States. So it is professional soccer, but it's the third tier. And so bringing some 30-something year old into that league with Miguel's experience and the rapport that and Brian already have with one another really, in my opinion, facilitates the coach, the manager to have good, solid, quote unquote, control of the locker room, because Miguel is obviously going to be a leader of that group, and all the other players who are going to be in their early 20s are going to be looking up to him, you know, as kind of a role model. So I think that kicks us off, Benny, with in regards to who should be a captain. I don't know if he's the captain, by the way, but who should be a captain, who should be the leader, and who should, you know, who can help the coach control the locker room is the one perhaps with the most pedigree and the one that all the other players are going to look up to and respect. So that is key in picking your leader.
Yeah, when it comes to youth soccer, Gary, obviously if you're an 8-year-old kid, you're not going to have much pedigree, right? So what qualities would you look for in those types of players? Does it have to be the loudest guy at training? Is it the best player on the team? What are you looking for? What was Brian looking for in those early teams? I mean, I don't know. Did Brian have a captain for the entire season, or would he rotate them every weekend? How did it work when he was working with the younger ages?
Yeah, so I literally just wrote down rotation of young players while you were talking. So I actually don't remember, because I don't think, in my estimation, it wasn't all that important. I think at the earliest ages, my opinion is give everybody a little taste of it, you know, and don't necessarily say this guy is the captain always and forever, because you're still trying to develop and they're developing their own character and their own personalities. And I think it's kind of fun and awesome to see a kid's confidence boost and eyes wide open. You know, when you say, Johnny, you're going to be captain, you know, this weekend. But it's kind of cool. You know, if somebody has a great training session during the week and really put in effort and maybe bagged all the balls without being asked or something, and you make an example of that kid to the rest of the kids saying, hey, you know what? These are the qualities of a leader. These are the qualities of a captain. And this is what happens at the professional level. So Johnny, this weekend, you're leading our team. You are the captain. You know what I mean? Right. So, but yeah. Long story short, let's be realistic. It's a set of two or three guys, usually the two or three, quote unquote, best players on the team who are the captains. And that's usually what would happen with our groups too.
So as you get a little bit older, Gary, and you're sticking with two or three captains throughout the entire season, like I said before, does it need to be the loudest kid on the field, or can it be that quiet maestro type, amazing on the ball,
the playmaker? The best player, whoever the best player is, Benny, it doesn't have to be the loudest or the one who actually exhibits the prototypical leadership phenotypes. Right. It doesn't have to be that one, but you know, perhaps once they're getting older, we're talking 15 years of age and above, maybe some of those things start becoming more and more prominent in what you look for for a captain, and where it doesn't have to be the most skilled, the most talented, the best player. It could be somebody who's really middle of the pack in the roster, but he is a legit general, if that makes sense, and he's your captain.
Yeah. Also, it might be good maybe to have that balance, right? Let's say you do have two or three captains. You choose one of them who's the phenom on the team, the best player. Even if he doesn't say a word during the game, obviously all the players are going to look up to him. And then you have that like middle of the pack type player who's keeping his teammates in check, you know, always communicating, talking on the field. And then maybe the last one is like that guy you said, the one that does everything without you having to ask him, like putting away the gear or staying later to help with whatever you need. So I think if you can find that balance, you might have a good mix of captains on your team, no?
Perfectly said. The only risk you run is like, don't water it down, right? Don't go out there and charitably be dishing out the captain's armband. Yeah. Then it makes the whole thing meaningless at that point, and nobody will respect the armband.
Yeah. No, I think you're right, Gary. I think if you're like, I mean, even when they're older, if you're rotating it like once every 2 or 3 weeks, the captain's band loses value. And it's like, all right, like, why am I even going to try? I'm not going to be captain next week. But if you're telling the team like, hey, over the next 2 weeks, if you want to be a captain, show me that you want to be in. These are the captains that are going to be captain for the entire season this year. So if you want it, then you got to earn it.
Yeah, you can do all kinds of little tricks and games. I think it is age dependent, though. Once you're older, you stop playing these little games, you know, these little confidence games and stuff. Nah. Once they're older, this is the captain. This is the best player on the team. What he says goes. End of story.
Right. Yeah, Gary. And you hear a lot about like the phrase natural leaders. And I think you can see those qualities even at the youngest ages. I had to send you this video, Gary. Maybe you've seen it. It's like this 10-year-old kid. I think he's honestly Argentinian or somewhere from Latin America, but it's him before the game, and maybe it's like a championship game. And this kid just gives like the most incredible, like 2-minute pregame speech, like so enthusiastic, so like pumping up the team. It's just an amazing speech that like some adults don't even like possess those qualities, you know? So do you think leadership is a natural ability, or can it be taught? Like that kid, do you think he got it from his parents, or what do you like? How can you develop leadership at a young age?
Ben, honestly, I don't have that answer. It's the proverbial nature versus nurture question that nobody has an answer to. I tend to lean more on the side of nature. You either have it or you don't. And can you develop leadership qualities? I think so. But there's also a component of, are you LeBron James or are you not LeBron James? And no matter how much you try to be as good as LeBron James, you will never be LeBron James as well on the leadership side.
Gary, for the players that, you know, we've mentioned as they get older, you want your best players being captains, right? But in some of those situations, maybe, you know, the player at training or in games, they're kind of in their own world or in their own head, not really, you know, helping the team out in those types of ways. How can you help that kind of player to become more of a leader on the field? Do you have to sit them down at training and say, hey, look, like, you know, your teammates look up to you? Maybe, because I know in Brian's coaching and in the whole 3-4-3 model and everywhere in, you know, world football, communication on the field is so important, right? I know that Brian was always emphasizing that in his trainings. But the fact of the matter is, Gary, a lot of kids, especially today, they're so quiet and they're so shy. They don't have very good, you know, social skills. And so when they step on the field, maybe, you know, soccer is just second nature to them. But when it comes to communicating, like they are not saying a word out there, you know. So how can you help these types of players to start to communicate?
Look, Ben, if you figure that out, you let me know. In my experience, it doesn't work. And Lord knows I've tried, Lord knows we've tried, and maybe we just get them a little bit too late. I don't know. I mean, like the quiet ones are the quiet ones and they don't change. It's really sad to see, ma'am, because especially at the professional level, even if you're not the captain, if you're a pro, you need to have that quality in you, or in large respect, you are crippling yourself. I can't tell you how many players I've had that I repeatedly, week after week, month after month, even year after year, kept emphasizing, hey, man, one of your weaknesses is that you do not talk on the field, right? You don't communicate. You don't command your teammates. You don't say anything. And they don't change, Benny. They don't change. Like, it maybe immediately the day after I give them the pep talk, they go out there and they try, they say a few things, you know, but you see it's not natural, it's not normal, and they're forcing it. And it turns out that what they're communicating on the field is a bunch of nonsense garbage because they're just focused on saying something, but they're actually not saying anything meaningful during the game. That's one. And number two is the level of, is the decibel level, how loud they're communicating. Because obviously on the field, you have to be very loud for the left winger to hear you, or very loud to add emphasis and be above the crowd or be above everybody else who's barking out orders. They're just not loud. They're like little mice out there. Hey, hey, Matt, come this way, Matt. What? Speak up, son. You know, it's one of the most frustrating things to see because it limits their careers. It limits their trajectories. And frankly speaking, if we're talking about the youth level too, it limits the coach because it's awesome when you also have a coach on the field or two coaches on the field or five coaches on the field versus you having to bark out orders from the sideline. So again, I return to my initial point. I don't have the solution. I've tried. I've failed miserably. No idea how to turn that ship around. I kind of feel like it's impossible. Either you have it or you just don't have it. Either you are brash like Conor McGregor or you're just a quiet mute. And the quiet mute is never going to be Conor McGregor.
Right. Yeah, Gary, I think you're right. When you do have those conversations with the player, it's almost like, all right, like you just had the conversation and then that day at training, they pick it up a little bit. You're like, oh, okay, you know, maybe Johnny might be able to communicate. And then the next day, he's back in his show, you know. But I'm pretty sure I heard this from Brian, but something that like stuck out to me when I was a kid, I think it was Brian. He said to the team, like, it doesn't matter how quiet you are off the field. Like, if you don't talk, you know, that's not a problem. But as soon as you step over the line, you have to like transform into a different person. Like, you are not the same person that you are off the field. You have to be loud. You have to be commanding, right? Almost kind of like the Mamba mentality, but how Kobe says that when he steps on the court, he changes into a completely different person. And I think if you can instill this in the kids, it's like, yeah, if off the field, you're quiet, no problem. But when you step onto the field, you have to become somebody else. Otherwise, one, you're not going to get playing time. Two, you're not going to achieve whatever it is that, you know, whatever your goals are. So I think instilling that in the kid is like, dude, when you step on the field, flip a switch and it's go time. Otherwise, you know, you're not going to make it very far.
Yeah. And it's hard when you're not the best player or it's right. Hard when you're on the lower half of the roster. I get it. It's like, I'm not going to tell Ephra to do X, Y, or Z. He's going to look at me and tell me to go F myself, you know? Yeah. So I understand that, but the phenomena doesn't stop there because, like I just finished saying, you could be the best player on the team and you're a mute. You just don't have it in you. You're not a general. You play awesome. You're a phenomenal player, but you just don't have that leadership quality in you, and it just doesn't happen. Look, even the classic case, right, of Messi. Look at Messi, okay? So Messi was the typical mute for almost his entire career, and it was only in the last maybe handful of years that he's more of a leader, and testimonials have come out that he actually is very vocal now, you know, on the field or in the locker room or whatever. Look how long it took that guy, and he's the GOAT.
Yeah.
So I just think it's a DNA sort of thing, probably, Ben. I don't know.
Right. I think we saw that switch here. What was it? The Copa America was at 2022 when Argentina won. Like I think after the game, they released the video of Messi in the locker room before the game addressing the team. And it's like, wow, you never even seen Messi say that many words before. And then like fast forward to, or I think it was 2020 Copa America. And then fast forward to the 2022 World Cup. This fool was just a different animal. You know, you see him commanding on the field, talking shit to the Netherlands players, like mean ass game that he had right there. So I don't know. Maybe it was that desire to win. Maybe he knew that all of his teammates were looking up to him, and he kind of, yeah, he flipped the switch and he's like, all right, I'm the guy. Let's do it.
Yeah. I mean, yeah, I don't know what else to say, Ben. I think I think it's a nature thing, and the nurture thing might play a little bit of a role, but it's the submissive of the two traits. I think the DNA really is in control, and the other one, it's going to be very hard to overcome the DNA.
Right. So Gary, let's go back to our imaginary youth team. Obviously, we know Jose's crack. Jose's the best player. He's going to be the captain. How can Johnny become the captain? You know, what qualities does he need to have on the field? What qualities does he need to have off the field? You know, Johnny, he really wants to become the captain, but obviously he's not the best player, but he knows that he can be a leader. So how can he show the coach that, like, he does have the qualities to be a captain?
I don't like your question, Benny. Because I'm thinking
you would never make Johnny captain. All right, maybe not. Yeah,
Make Johnny captain. The only time Johnny gets to be captain is the scenario I painted at the very beginning of our convo. Is they're very little kids, they're tiny little kids, and Johnny had a hell of a training session or training week and was a prime example of some qualities that the team needs at the moment, because maybe they're all being undisciplined or disorganized or not helping out or slacking off or whatever, and the team needs an example to be made of, and Johnny's the example. I'm like, you know what, I'm gonna throw Johnny a bone here. But outside of that, Benny, I'm not making Johnny a captain. I don't care what happens.
Let me reframe the question, right? Mm-hmm. When Johnny was 8, his parents signed up for the 343 masterclass. Over the next 3 years, this fool just massively improved. Now he's, you know, the third or fourth best guy in the team. And now he wants to be captain, Gary. So congrats to Johnny. He's made a lot of progress.
Oh, man. I think
you know what I mean, though. Like, if
I sincerely, it's just a matter of throwing him a bone maybe once, unless he truly exhibits leadership qualities. You know who this reminds me of, Ben, is your oldest brother, Danny. So Danny was regularly, I'd say, bottom half of the roster from U14 through U19, which is what Brian had him for, bottom half of the roster, but always working on his game, always trying, always had a good attitude, et cetera, et cetera, et cetera. And by the time he became a 17, 18-year-old, which is when they ended up winning a national championship, he had blossomed to become a starter on the team and very vocal on the team, more vocal than all the best players on the team. And the best players on the team respected him, that he had the respect of everybody on the team, even though he wasn't the best player. Maybe he was in the middle of the pack. And so, if I'm not mistaken, I think we've made him captain on several occasions. Maybe we didn't, but I would have no hesitation in making Danny maybe even the permanent captain on the squad, even though he's middle of the pack. Again, it has to come from him. Now, if a parent comes and asks me, or Johnny comes and asks me, what do I have to do to be captain? Maybe I share the story of Danny Rogers. I'm like, look, this is something that you're going to have to develop over a long period of time. It's not going to happen overnight. And there's no guarantees that you will transform yourself into a leader, because not everybody is meant to be that leader. And it took Danny Rogers maybe 4 years to become that person and have the respect of all the best players on the team, to the point where they would, honestly, like, if there was a PK and it was an important PK, I would see no problem. I could see a world where Jonathan Prieto or Choco or all these guys go to Danny and say, hey, Danny, you take it. Like, they would have that much confidence in him.
So Danny was Johnny.
Danny was Johnny. Oh, man.
That's no, hilarious.
But honestly, man, that kid developed into something else, let me tell you.
Yeah. No, Gary, I think some players just have that ability to earn the respect of all their teammates kind of without even trying. And then on the other end, you see some people that, like, try so hard to become a leader on the team, and it's kind of like, to the other players, it's kind of just laughable. Like, what is this kid doing? Like, this kid has no business being our leader, you know? So it kind of does, you do kind of have to have that natural ability to lead, but not only to lead, but to get your teammates to like you and to want to play with you and want to be around you. And I think that comes from your own inner desire to get better for yourself, letting your teammates know, like, hey, even if I'm not the best player right now, I'm going to be working my ass off for you guys, for the team. That way, if my name does get called and I'm on the field, I'm going to be ready, you know? And I think why Danny's teammates respected him so much is because he was able to, like, no matter where they came from, he made them feel welcome. He made them feel like they were his best friend, you know? Or, like, even like it sounds stupid, but Danny would say like, hey, you want my dad to give you a ride home after training, or, you know, hey, let's go eat after the games. And he really brought like all the, especially the new players when Choco came to the team or any new player, Danny was the first one to be like, you know, what's up? Welcome to the team. Like, you're part of the family now. So I think that really is a leadership quality right there, is bringing people together and, you know, making sure everybody feels part of the team.
Yeah. And he assimilated into he became one of them and mimicked their culture too, and really embraced their culture, because again, the demographic of Brian's teams were principally Latino in nature, you know, dominated by Mexican Americans, but a lot of Latino injection in there as well, and a lot of Spanish talking on the training grounds and on the pitch. And Danny learned Spanish himself, you know, and started talking to all the guys and, or at least saying certain things in Spanish, you know, he literally became a Mexican.
Then, yeah.
And they kind of embraced him for it.
Yeah. Yeah. No, every other sentence he'll just throw in a no mames.
Yeah.
And he's over 11. I got to find a picture of the team, you know, because the audience needs to know this forward used to come with the, remember when he started wearing the bandanas, Gary,
like, yes,
during the game? That was so funny, dude. Just, you know, but maybe, I don't know, maybe he did that to bring a smile to his other teammates. And they're like, Danny, what the fuck are you doing? Or maybe they respected it. I don't know, but
yeah,
I'll find a picture.
No, he had a very good balance of being like the class clown and the serious one, you know, and he would kind of juxtapose those two things. Yeah, quite a talent, quite a character. Indeed.
But anyways, moving on, let's kind of shift the focus a little bit to parents. Obviously, parents love to see their kids step up into leadership roles. You know, how can the parents best support their children in the sense of, you know, hey, I know you want to be a leader. Here's some things that maybe you can work on at home. You know, how can the parents best help their kids? If the kid's desire is to become a captain, you know, what can the parents do at home to help them along their way?
Yeah, but Benny, is this actually a thing? Do kids actually like want to be a captain?
Dude, if you go to any youth team right now, Gary, and you ask the team, it doesn't matter, like all the way up into the age of 14, 15, okay? Boys team, girls team, you ask the team like, hey, who wants to be the captain this weekend or this season? Every single one of them raises their hand, Gary.
Seriously?
And like, I swear. And like I said, I know it's kind of like that tricks and games, but if you tell them like, hey, over the next 2 weeks, you know, you guys are going to be competing for the captain band, the next 2 weeks, Gary, will be the most intense trainings that you've ever had. The gear will get picked up faster than it ever has before. Like, the kids want to be the captain, Gary. I don't
Seriously?
Know. I swear, dude, I swear.
Okay.
And here's the funny thing though. Like, I'd say, you know, a kid, not all kids, but you know, in some cases the kid who won the competition at the end of the 2 weeks, right, he was a great leader, you know, helpful with the gear. As soon as this fool gets the captain armband and he's in the game, he kind of like shuts down and is like super quiet. And maybe he just can't handle the responsibility of being the captain. But I promise you, Gary, every single kid out there would want to be the captain of their team.
Okay. I didn't know this was a thing.
Yeah. All right. Seriously.
Okay, so I guess the question is, how do you, like, what should the parents do? And I don't know, man. I don't know. I haven't given this much thought because I didn't think this was a thing, dude.
Yeah, it's a real thing, dude.
From my vantage point, our vantage point's like, hey, homie, you're the best player. You're the captain. End of story. And we might throw a bone here or there for another player for the reasons I gave, but I don't even know because I've never even had that conversation with parents of this way he needs to do to be a captain. The only conversations I've had with parents are developing the character of the player and having them be more vocal on the field and constantly telling the parents, hey, this is one of his primary deficiencies. And the parents usually acknowledge it because they know their kids. They know that their kid is quiet. They know that their kid is shy. They know that their kid maybe is lacking in confidence. And, you know, obviously the parent is always going to err on the side of their child, you know, and give the child the benefit of the doubt. So for instance, one of the things I would always hear is like, yeah, but Gary, you know, he's lacking in confidence, right? That's why he doesn't talk, or that's why he doesn't do these things. And he's lacking in confidence because he's not getting playing time or much playing time, or he's playing out of position, or you name the reason, there's a reason that they have for lack of confidence. But I don't know how to fix this problem, Benny, I guess is what I'm saying. You've stumped me. I have no idea.
Yeah. Well, I think a lot of it just comes from, especially after the games, Gary, or, you know, the parents not coddling the kids, because if the kids get coddled and are constantly babied, like there's no way that they're going to become a leader or hold any responsibility. And they're just not capable of it because everything has been like handed to them. You know what I'm saying? I think the parents need a little bit of tough love to the kids to say like, hey, look, things aren't always going to go your way, but it's about how are you going to bounce back from the situation.
Yeah. And it's the recurring theme on the podcast, on our show, right? Is stop being soft. I mean, we talk about this all the time. If you're soft, then your kid's going to be soft. In my opinion, the nature part of the equation is your kid's a softy because you're soft. If you advocate for eighth place trophies, guess what? Your kid's going to be not a leader. He's not going to be Genghis Khan out there, Alexander the Great, conquering the world if he knows that there's an eighth place trophy waiting for him. Or if you're constantly saying it's everybody else's fault, oh, the coach doesn't know what he's doing, or, oh, Ricky should be passing the ball to you more often, or, oh, you know, you're better than so-and-so, you should be getting more playing time, or, oh, we should go to another team or another club because over here, X, Y, and Z is bad, and on and on and on, because this is kind of like what happens. I mean, you see this in youth soccer and in pro soccer, okay? You see this constantly. It's always somebody else's fault. Never, always pointing the finger, never pointing the thumb. You know, you got to teach your kids that life ain't fair. You don't always win. You may rarely win. You may never win. And if you want to win, these are the characteristics that you need to develop for yourself. And frankly, Benny, if I look at our captains over the course of time, who they were, the parents weren't softies really.
Right. So the parents were more strict on them or tough on them, or what do you mean by that? It's not softies.
Yeah, they just weren't soft. They weren't of the ones where you can envision on the ride home that they're saying, oh, it's okay. You know, they were the ones who kind of try to inject personal accountability into their kids. Let me put it to you that way.
Yeah, that makes sense, Gary. Not full, but tell me.
But it's like a chicken and the egg situation, right? Because if the player is already the best or one of the best players on the team, then most of the time the parent doesn't have much to complain about because they're playing all the minutes, they're scoring all the goals, they're the captain, you know, all these things. So they don't encounter challenges and obstacles really all that much, because I've seen so many situations where that parent or family, the moment that they do encounter obstacles and challenges, they flip like a pancake. And now all of a sudden they've turned into one of the softies, one of the other ones where they're blaming the whole world and it's not their own fault, so on and so forth. So I don't know, man.
Was Efra ever the captain of the team?
I don't know. That's a good question, dude.
Because obviously, you know, at the time, Efra was the most talented kid on the field in most cases, in most games. But I mean, you look at Efra, he's not like he's a natural leader or anything, not like holding players accountable, kind of more so just worrying about himself, but incredibly gifted, incredibly talented. You know, I kind of feel like I remember seeing him wearing the captain bands in certain games or scenarios.
Yeah. I don't think he was the captain, the regular captain at all. I think most of the time it was Charlie. Let's remember that Effort was playing a couple years up.
Yeah. Too. Right.
So he was the baby of the group, even though he was quote unquote the best of the group.
Yeah.
So yeah, I don't know, man, but certainly you're right. He doesn't exhibit those sorts of vocal leadership traits for sure. Definitely not. Right. I think of all the players, maybe, I mean, only one kind of stands out as being a leader, and that's Leo, the center back, the guy who currently plays for Chivas Guadalajara. Yeah, all the other ones, mostly mutes, unfortunately.
It seems scary that I feel like personally center backs make the best captains, you know, especially the ones that are extremely vocal, because if you can have a leader in your back line, but, you know, they see the whole field in front of them, they're commanding the players, letting everybody know what they're doing. Like my favorite, one of my favorite players and captains of all time is Puyol. I mean, if you just look at him and it's like shit, this guy's a leader. Like I'll do anything for this guy if he's my captain. I don't know. Do you think center backs make the best captains, or can it be like, or you also look at like, okay, Luka Modric, center mid, you know, even if he's not the loudest guy, he's still a very respectable captain.
Yeah. Or Messi up top. And of course, but I think there is something to positional dependence.
Right.
And I do think that center backs or goalkeepers, that position in particular requires a general more than the other positions, because you see all 20, you know, all 22 or 21 players in front of you. And so you have that sort of bird's eye view, that general's view of all the troops and all the opponents. So you have to be the one that is most vocal and commanding, as I call it, the blob in front of you. You know, you have to be able to maneuver everybody in front of you. And so you need those leadership characteristics for those positions. So I don't think it's a coincidence that a lot of center backs are captains around the world, because you need it. Or a lot of goalkeepers, for that matter, also are captains. As opposed to up top, yeah, you might score a million goals up top, but you're not really commanding the blob and orchestrating the defensive shape and the defensive structure. And when you're attacking, there's nobody in front of you. It's like you and nobody else in front of you. So you're not forced to be a leader or a commander. And if you're in the center of the park, central mid, man, there's just so much things you have to be processing all the time that you can't also assume being the general. That's just way too much burden, in my opinion, most of the time. So yeah, man, there's a positional thing going on.
Is there anybody, like, who would you say is your favorite, like, captain or leader that you've ever seen? It could be like somebody from the old days too. Is there anybody that sticks out in your mind?
You know, I'll just tell you what immediately came to my mind, whether it's right or wrong. Maradona, Diego Armando Maradona, right? The Argentine GOAT, won the World Cup. And the reason that comes to mind is because he was very vocal on the field and off the field. And so off the field, he wasn't shy at all. Just, he'll talk shit, you know, when shit had to be talked, and you'd be cool when he had to be cool. But that sort of vocal nature in him of expressing his unvarnished truth to the world, coupled with him being the best player in the world by far, is just like, that's the guy.
Yeah.
That's the guy. And all the teams that he was on, for the most part, he led to glory. And the team that he was on sucks balls, Benny. They suck. The Argentine team of 1986 and especially 1990, well, 86 was decent, okay? But 1990 was fucking shit. It was a shit show, okay? The Bad News Bears, for those folks who know what that movie's all about. This guy just single-handedly just dragged the whole team to the final. And what's even crazier is when he was at Napoli in Italy. Napoli was a small club, didn't exist. Nobody gave them any, like, no chance. But Diego goes there and fucking makes them champion, dude. And just a bunch of scrubs on the field. He himself, you know, led the charge. And that's the guy that comes to mind, dude.
Legend, bro. And during a quick line before the game probably helped him be a little bit more vocal enough.
Yeah, but that also shows you, like, he didn't give a fuck. He lived his life, and if you like it, great. If you didn't like it, go fuck yourself. That was his attitude.
Oh, there's a clip that comes to mind here. I think it's when Argentina's, I think they're playing Italy, and it's the national anthem. Correct me if I'm wrong, but it's Italy's, like, booing the national anthem, and you just see Maradona's face just, like, lighting up with fucking rage and fury. And then, like, if Steffo was on my team and I see that, like, I'm going to war with this fool. You know, you could just tell he loved his country, he loved his team, he was willing to do anything. And I think that's a great quality to have if you're a leader of the team. You know, all the players obviously look up to him, and it helped that he was also the best player in the world.
Yeah, that was the World Cup in Italy, 1990. And it was, they were booing the national anthem, and he was verbalizing hijos de puta, yeah, yeah. Over and over again. And that's because he felt obviously slighted because he played in Italy and just made the Italian club something amazing and the league amazing and all that stuff. So it was a slap in the face of the people not being grateful in any sort of respect and being disrespectful. So, yeah. I remember that's that. You should throw that clip in here, man.
I will. Was he currently at the time playing for Napoli, or had he already moved on from there? If he was currently playing for Napoli and he's in Italy and they're brewing it, like, fuck, what a diss, dude.
Yeah, he was playing for Napoli. He was playing for Napoli during that time.
Damn, that's crazy. I didn't realize that.
From 1984 to 1991, he played at Napoli. Yeah, sons of bitches, right? I'm trying to remember if that match, if that was the final. It may have been the final, and they were booing Argentina because Argentina eliminated Italy. Oh. I don't remember. I don't remember exactly.
Interesting. Are you looking it up?
Yeah. Yeah, yeah. So Argentina beat Italy in penalties. 1990 World Cup. This was the semifinal.
Yeah, yeah. And so that was the previous game and then the following game they were brewing?
I'm pretty sure it was the final against Germany where all the Italians in the stadium were booing because I remember Argentina was wearing the blue jerseys. And obviously, if you're playing Italy, Italy's using blue.
Yeah. Dang. Context. That's wild.
You see how it is in soccer around the world. Nobody's soft. They don't give a fuck. Yeah. I don't care. I don't care that you're the GOAT. I don't care that you play for Napoli and did amazing things for Italian football. You eliminated our national team in the semifinal. This was supposed to be our World Cup. Go fuck yourself.
Yeah. Now imagine the outrage here in 2026. People are booing the United States national anthem. I mean, you even saw it like recently with the U.S. hockey. Where like they were playing against Canada and Canada was like booing the national anthem. And then immediately after the game, there was like three fights that started, but did just the outrage from the media, like, oh, how dare Canada? How disrespectful are they? You know?
No, sports is deeply political, dude. You know, I was just having this thought the other day while I was walking the dogs. Here in American soccer has become incredibly political. Everybody who's talking about soccer, the media people who cover the men's national team or the women's national team or youth soccer or MLS, you name it, everybody is extremely political. And what I was thinking of was just like 8 to 10 years ago, whenever we would inject a political sort of opinion regarding socioeconomics or how football affects us socially, politically, economically, and culturally, people would get on me or get on us or get on anybody who would dare say anything kind of political and say, keep politics out of sports, you know, stay in your lane, this sort of stuff. Like they were deeply offended. They wanted soccer just to be soccer. And why are you guys doing anything political whatsoever? Now they're all fucking political, every single one of them. So it's kind of like the mainstream American soccer demographic kind of has graduated a little bit to realize and recognize that it's not just a game, right? No, it is a vehicle. The sport, football, is a vehicle whereby people express their social, political, economic, and cultural views through that vehicle.
Right.
It's not just a competition, Ben. So it's just an interesting thing there because we're back in 1990. I was a kid back then and I'm seeing it live broadcast. That's what's going on. So I've been entrenched in this political and cultural warfare through the proxy that is football all my life.
Right. And is this only the case like internationally, Gary, or domestically? Is sports also, you know, a movement for social, political economics? Is it only when it comes to the World Cup or like even is MLS? Does this fall into this category of what you're saying?
No. So it's definitely not just international. From the American vantage point, the mainstream American soccer folks get most of a taste of this that I'm describing through the national team, right? Because then there's a flag versus a different flag. There's the United States versus Iran, right, in the last World Cup. And you can't help but have that political stuff kind of injected into you. But around the world, it's not just international football. It's in the domestic clubs. You know, River is the club of the wealthy and the rich. That's what they represent. Boca, their arch nemesis, arch rival, is a club with working class values. It is the working man's club. You know, it's the poor people's club. And like that, it exists in Spain, it exists in Portugal, it exists all across the world. Now, when it comes to MLS, they're still super far behind. And that's because MLS teams aren't real clubs. So they don't have their own, I mean, literally, like for real, their own sort of cultural, political, economic, and social leanings. Or you get what I'm saying, right? Since all of the teams are teams of the one singular club that is MLS, they all share the same values. So it's one monolithic sort of thing, Ben. There is none of that legit club vibe to any of them.
Right. I wanted to ask you, Gary, you recently posted, I think it was like the ticket prices for, you know, the America game versus, it was the CONCACAF Champions League, no? The tweet was, you know, look at how inclusive soccer is in the U.S. and obviously the ticket prices are like over $100 for everyone. So did you see any of some of the comments that people were responding back to? Were pretty funny.
Yeah. So look, let me roll back to what I said just a moment ago. There is the political stuff here in American soccer, but it's between two groups. It's the MLS group is one monolithic group. And then there's everybody who's not allowed in that bubble. That is the other group. So it's the wealthy, rich, entitled, suburban, non-soccer first household demographic, that's MLS, versus the soccer first households, the socioeconomic, you know, middle to lower middle class, the non-wealthy, the ones who believe in meritocracy versus bureaucracy, the ones who want to fight for freedom and opportunity. That is the anti-MLS social, political, economic, cultural, soccer demographic. So, and those two factions are the only two factions, and they're the ones who are kind of at war with one another. What should be happening, however, is all the teams in our first division or second division, all of them should be in completely separate, independent, legit clubs. And then you would have inter-club fighting because Club A would believe in certain things and Club B's population or demo would believe in a different set of values, and they go after one another. But now, full circle to your question about my tweet from yesterday. Yeah, it was just an image of the stadium of the Portland Timbers, you know, and the sale price for the seats in their match against Club America that's coming up. And yeah, you know, the ticket prices range from, I don't know, $100 to $250 per seat, something like that. Bro, a family of four or even just two people. Okay, so you're going to spend, what, $300 or $500 to go watch a game? That's what they're asking for. And then, of course, parking, that's an arm and a leg. And then if you want a bite to eat or a drink, they rip you off there as well. So this is not a sport here in the United States that's for anybody or the common man. Can the common man go to these games and do they go? Of course they do. Of course they do. But do they go to all the games? Nah, it's kind of like a one-off here or there. So
yeah,
this is what American soccer is. It's for the suburban, well-to-do folks, basically, and everybody else can go F themselves.
Yeah, no, for Gary, for the suburban, wealthy, you know, silver spoon class, it's like, for them, it's like, oh, $2, like, this is a bargain, you know, let's go every weekend. But for that one, you know, lower class or middle class family where they're, every single one of their kids loves soccer, it's like, you know, are we going to go to the game this week or are we going to have dinner every single night? And that's the dilemma that they're facing. And so, you know, I guarantee you those kids would want to go to every single game like the other families do, but they don't. And the thing that's crazy to me is, okay, Gary, imagine the prices were, I don't know, 30 to 40% cheaper. The stadiums would be completely filled. Like I recently went to the LAFC game versus the Rapids, which is, you know, the same tournament. The stadium was half empty, Gary, you know? So why would you want to have a half empty stadium when you could fill it up with people that actually want to go and see the game and support the team? But, you know, that's that's not what they're aiming to do, I guess. I don't know. It's wild to me. I don't know why you wouldn't want the stadium filled. You know, lower the prices, get everybody in, but I don't know. It seems pretty backwards to me.
Well, they don't care. The business model, as we've described before, is the owners own this asset not to make money from the asset through gate receipts or through selling beers, or that's not the play. The play is a real estate play. Is you own a asset that is limited in supply and you have a monopoly and you just hold on to this thing for 5, 10, 15, 20, 30 years. And then the asset price will just go up no matter what. And then you sell the asset you like, and your investment has gone up 10X or 20X or 50X. It has nothing to do with, oh my God, let's fill our state. Or it doesn't depend on you filling the stadium. Let me put it to you that way. It doesn't depend on you selling players overseas. It doesn't depend on you winning championships or coming in last place. It doesn't depend on you having an academy and developing players. It doesn't depend on anything, Ben. It's just an asset that's limited. You squat on it, and then it appreciates in value. It's a way for, it's your piggy bank. It's a bank, Benny, that protects you from inflation and protects you from all these things. It's interesting that you bring up the attendance side of the equation, because there's a lot of things going around, like Inter Miami. Obviously the league is kicking off. Inter Miami has the GOAT, right? Or has Messi, has Messi's friends there. And the stadium's also half empty. The novelty of it all kind of has already worn off. People don't care. They don't go. And folks here in MLS are scratching their heads. And I'm like, well, you're in Miami, and Miami has one of the most vibrant soccer first cultures and heritage in the country, if not the world. And the fact that they're not going to Inter Miami games shows you that they don't give a shit about the competition. They know it's not real football, Ben. They don't feel a connection to it because it's not a real competition. You're not there suffering that your team might lose the game or suffering that your team is drawing the game, you know, or ecstatic that your team is going to get 3 points. Nobody over there, and in general across the league, nobody's having those emotions. So they don't care, Ben. They just don't go. It doesn't matter if Messi's around.
Yeah. Fake league. Like,
and they don't want to get ripped off, Ben. Look, the America game, the stadium is going to be full, America versus Portland Timbers, because it's America, and the Mexican-American demographic is going to fill up that stadium. The problem is that that's not a signal that it's inclusive, the fact that people open up their wallet and are going. These people are living paycheck to paycheck, a lot of them, right? And maybe are living in debt and credit. They swipe the credit card just because it's not a once-in-a-lifetime thing, but who knows when you'll get an opportunity to see America again. So they will break the piggy bank to just take maybe their kid or their kids and the family and drop $1,000 on this thing.
Right.
You're ripping them off, basically.
Yeah, it was hilarious, Gary. I saw on either Instagram or X, there was like an MLS franchise.
Yes, they correct. You're learning.
I know. I caught myself before I was about to say, like, oh, shit. But they were promoting like this ticket package. And the promotion was like, okay, for $400, you get a ticket to the Inter Miami game versus whatever this team was, plus 7 other games of the season. I was freaking dying, dude. It's like, seriously? And the comments are like, oh, what if Messi doesn't play? Do we get our money back?
Yeah, and you know what's interesting too? This has been going on across the league for forever, since the beginning. I'm not going to say the vast majority. A proportion of the folks who are in those stadiums just got tickets for free. They give away tickets to get people into the stadiums.
Right.
Like you have to give them away for people to attend MLS matches. It's pretty interesting.
Yeah.
It's not authentic, Ben.
Yeah, for sure.
Benny, I know when you were a kid, you went and saw the LA Galaxy and you liked Alexi Lalas, the red hair, and Piva Janis was your idol or something. But bro, like we live here in Southern California, and there is zero feel or attachment at all with those teams.
For sure. No, Alexi Lalas is, I hated that fool, but Kobe Jones is my idol. You know?
Kobe Jones. And, Kobe Jones.
You know what they say, dude, never meet your heroes. I was at the Galaxy game, you know, taking a piss, funny enough. Mm-hmm. And this fool was like right next to me, like, what the fuck, Kobe Jones? And obviously I didn't say anything, but, you know, when we walked out, I was like, hey, like, you know, Kobe, you know, I used to be your biggest fan. This fool just like fucked me off.
Well, he probably felt that you were fucking with him too. I don't know. Or maybe you weren't. Maybe you were. You were starstruck. You were like, oh my God, Kobe, can I have your autograph?
I was like, hey, like Kobe, like, you know, used to be my favorite player. Like, you know, nice to meet you. And this whole thing, go fuck yourself, basically.
Oh, man.
Never meet your heroes, Chief.
Yeah. Yeah. Well. All right, cool, man. We started talking about captains and it turned into this, which is great. I like the second part of it more because I never gave it a thought about, who am I going to make captain, you know, and how to, I always thought, well, dude, just give it to the best players and end the story.
I think if, you know, just to wrap it up, you know, bring it full circle, I think if you choose the wrong captain, you know, the culture of your team like completely disappears. Not only that, you lose the locker room. You know, the players don't respect you anymore. So, you know, I think choosing the right captain is huge for the team because you don't want to put somebody in that position that's one that's not going to go to war for you as a coach and have your back. But also you don't want a person there that's going to be, you know, just not a good leader, lazy, not really caring about the team. I think if you have a good captain, you know, Gary, any little advantage that you can get as a coach to win and be successful, you want to do, no? And so having a good captain is, I think it's huge.
I agree. I just never gave it that much thought because, you know, it is what it is. And I mean, I was a player, not a pro player, but I was a player. And obviously the captain thing was kind of set in stone for the most part, who the captain was.
Yeah. Well, there may be a stumpy today. How does promotion relegation tie into who you select as captain?
Well, I think it'll make you be more and more cautious as to who you select, because like you just finished saying, it is critical that you make the right decision and not the wrong decision, because it could all go downhill for you. So maybe I would have thought about it a little bit more.
There's promotion relegation. Johnny never sees the armband, no?
No chance. Oh man. Or maybe it just goes to show you, Ben, that maybe it just isn't that important. If promotion relegation doesn't influence who gets the captain's armband all that much, maybe the captain's armband isn't all that critical. I'm just kidding, Ben. There's so many testimonials. Mourinho has a very good story that escapes me at the moment about when he was coaching in Porto. And, I do remember it. He was coaching in Porto and they were playing against Belenense. Okay, and Belenense is historically a team that is bottom of the table or middle of the table, and they were losing against Belenense at halftime, and the captain just came up to him before entering the locker room to have the halftime talk. The captain came up to Mourinho and said, hey coach, just stay out here please for a while, let me go in there and talk to the guys first or something. And so Mourinho just sat outside the locker room and he heard the kind of captain like lay into the team and rip the team a new one. And then the captain came back out. He's like, okay, you can come in now, you know? And then Mourinho just came in and he didn't have to do any of that whatsoever. He was enabled by the captain to be the positive voice in the locker room for that last minute of the halftime talk. And then they went out and then, you know, scored three goals and went 3-2 or something like that. So, yeah. Just an interesting little tidbit. Maybe we can inject that into the episode.
I had captains that they were not leaders. And people, normally the connection is the armband, this guy is the captain, this guy is the leader. No, many times the captain is not a leader. So I think you touched exactly in the point. These two guys, they were leaders. And when you have these leaders, you become more a coach, you focus more on the coaching side of it. I had one in Porto, Josh Costa, that one day we were losing a game against a team called Belenense. We were losing 2-0 at halftime. And I was walking to the dressing room, and of course they could all see that I was fuming. And when I was going to the dressing room, Josh Costa told me, wait outside 2 minutes, please. He went inside, he closed the door, he did the dirty job for me. So he opened the door then, and he told me, coach this. Because he did in the dressing room everything that I would do. We won 3-2. He was a central defender. He never scored goals in his life. He scored two. He scored two goals. He never scored a goal in his life, I think. So you touch exactly the point. The captain and the leader. And it's a big, big, big difference. You don't buy leaders. You don't make leaders. And when you have them, your team is one step ahead. But unfortunately, football now is full of image. And people give more attention to the ones that look than to the ones that really are. And there are many guys that are real leaders in the dressing room.
That's scary. Actually, like, you know, in our quarterfinal of the playoffs, you know, my goalie, she's a senior, she's the captain. She's every single game the most vocal player on the field in a positive way. But it was, you know, we were going into overtime. And, you know, we were all huddled up and she just fucking laid into the team like I'd never seen her before, like ripping them, like, because then the last 10 minutes, like, they kind of not stopped trying, but they were gassing out. She's like, what the fuck are you guys doing? Like, you know, we're here. We can go to the semifinals. Like, this is everything that we worked for, everything that we wanted. Like, bro, I was so impressed and it just woke everybody up. And then it allowed me to kind of like, hey, you know, take a deep breath, relax, like, we're good, then, you know, let's go and do it. So I think the captain is huge.
Yeah. So speaking of which, tell everybody that you're playing for the title this Saturday. High school championship, no?
Yeah.
First time head coach at the varsity level there for the girls team.
Yeah. So it's going to be exciting. Division I CIF final. You know, I've told everybody if I win this one, I'll just go ahead and retire. It's not going to get much better than this, so. You know, when this gets published, the game will have already been played. Hopefully I'm a CIF champion by then. You know, I've never wanted to win a game as much as I have wanted to win this one. So it'll be fun, dude. It'll be fun.
Yo, Benny, stop doing win at all costs. Just let it happen. It's fine.
No, yeah, I know that. I'm not saying to win at all costs, but anything that I can do to win, I'll fucking do it.
Good, man. Good. Have you ever gotten a red card as a coach?
I have, but you'll fucking laugh at the reason why I was like this, like a spring league, and the ref was Mexican, and like we made a call or whatever. I was like, no mames, this will just give me a straight red card.
Just because you said that? Just because you said no mames, that's it?
Yeah, seriously. I don't know. I guess I went to my my homie Jose, who's straight up Mexican. I'm like, hey, I told the ref this. Is it really that offensive? He's like, yeah, you probably don't want to say that to the ref. But dude, it's funny because like in the pro leagues or in the English Premier League, the players or the coaches are telling the ref, like, you know, fuck off or you go fuck yourself. Here, if you say any little, I mean, Gary, within the SoCal Soccer League and Stay Cup and all this thing, they have this new like zero tolerance for abuse towards referees. But like any little thing that you say, like, or disrespect them, you're getting a yellow or maybe even a straight red. So got a little bit soft, dude. Dude, what the fuck, dude?
Yeah.
How is that a red card, dude?
It's just annoying that they write these rules in a way that doesn't represent reality and in a way that you can't object to them. So if they say you can't abuse referees, oh, okay, that makes sense. Yeah, don't abuse referees, but then what they're interpreting as abuse is like you just saying it's a corner ref or, you know, and when you call it a goal kick, and, oh, abuse of the referee. Come on, man, stop. Fucking horse shit. And they did the same thing with the cancel culture and the hate speech and, oh, hate speech. You're telling the ref it should be a red card. Oh, you fucking hate speech on the referee. What the fuck is going on? You're canceled. Red card. Get out of here. Disciplinary committee. It literally just happened against the Inter Miami game, right? Isn't Messi getting fined now because?
Oh yeah. He put his hand on the back of a neck of an assistant coach at the end.
Get
of the game.
Get the fuck out of here!
And all like this, dude. Like, hey, like talking to him. Like, come on.
Yeah.
Dude.
So fucking soft. And all these little MLS clowns online. Oh, it's a bad look. Messi shouldn't be doing. Fuck out of here, man.
Yeah, this Messi's tarnishing his career.
Tarnish his image. And get the, what the, what kind of a world am I living in, Benny?
That's hilarious.
Soft, soft. It's, I usually get hooked sometimes scrolling some reels or whatever when the old school basketball guys start talking, like Kevin Garnett or Charles Oakley or Michael Jordan or all these guys talking about how the NBA is for pussies now, basically. You know, and back in the day it was destruction. You know, if you go try to go to the hole, you're fucking good luck. Your head's going to get chopped off. And now it's like, oh, he touched me with his pinky. Flagrant foul.
That's hilarious, dude. Did you ever get red carded when you're on the sidelines with Brian's teams?
Or no.
Maybe not red carded, but kicked out of the games?
No, no, never. Keep in mind that. Yeah, Brian has had maybe a couple, two or three or something like that. But yeah, then he's coaching from the car in the parking lot, you know, like he's on the phone.
He's calling you.
It's hilarious, man. Good stuff. Good times.
Gary, tell Danny to sub after this was gas.
Yeah. All these sorts of things, man. So hilarious. It's kind of like when the professional coaches also get red card and they go up to the stadium stands, but you see them on the walkie-talkie or whatever, communicating with their staff.
That's hilarious, dude. Hey, Gary, I think it would be good. Maybe in 2 weeks, a lot of people have been asking to do like a live Q&A episode. So maybe we could set that up.
Okay. Well, let's see. I'm just wondering if we have enough people on YouTube for that to be a worthwhile or even practical thing. So here's the little test for everybody. We're 1 hour into this episode. If you've stuck around to the very end, cool. That means that there's some sort of commitment there and you'll probably be in the live Q&A. So if you've stuck around here to the 1 hour mark, go ahead in the comment section and say, type in live Q&A and let's see how many of those live Q&A comments we get. And if we get maybe over, I don't know. If it's efficient, we'll be like, okay, at least we have, you know, 20 folks who will show up.
Yeah, that'll be good. And I know a lot of people a couple episodes ago commented box. They are coming, I promise you. Once I wrap up this high school season, it's been the most stressful time of my career, but they will be coming out to those people that commented. So very soon.
Cool. And I should remark, the shirts that are going out aren't the top quality that I advertised right before, because, well, I mean, we can share the whole story. This was a batch of 343 shirts that we ended up doing a soccer camp for, and we had leftovers. And so obviously those aren't the premium top of the notch stuff, but at least we'll send you a little something.
All right, brother. Sounds good. Dude. Good luck today.
Cool. Thank you, Benny. Well, that's it for today, guys. Thank you for listening. A reminder for coaches, you can get both the free and premium coaching programs at 343coaching.com. Don't let anyone tell you your teams can't win by playing dominant possession-based football while also developing individual players to the highest levels. Nonsense. We've proved it at every single level, and so have hundreds of serious member coaches across the country. Now that we've moved on to the pro level, we're delivering everything we've learned in the program. Don't wait and continue delaying getting on a proven path. And parents, 343masterclass.com is where you want to go to get a working compass for navigating the American soccer landscape with your player. It's pretty bad out there, but let our experience guide you. Lastly, if you're coaching 7v7, we've got you covered there as well. Go to 7v7coaching.com. Until next time, cheers everyone, and keep building.